Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaBusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hello and welcome to the show today. This is Rick Thiemann. I'm your host. Along with me is Gordon Medlock, who I'll formally introduce in a minute. But you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. We're in our fourth week. I welcome you. If you haven't been to our website, you can check us out. My firm is called The Executive Group. I've started the firm about 20 years ago. You can find us on www.theeg.com. As we came across the show is an outreach of the book. The book is also called What's Leadership Got to Do with It. And the principles are what we call the fundamental five, and they were founded upon 20 years of consulting work that I've done that looks at organizations in terms of how they come together. But as the book speaks to the five fundamentals, or what I call the fundamental five, it covers the essence of what a company's corporate culture should look like. It also covers what individual contributors have to do with the organization. Chapter 3 of the book speaks to the team dynamics, which Gordon and I are going to explore today. Chapter 4 of the book gets into the business dynamics and the business structure and the business plan, which we'll discuss in the next 2 weeks after this week's show. And then the fifth chapter of the book talks about the structure and the metrics that we use to drive our business, which we'll get into later on. The show runs for 15 weeks, and we'll have a number of different topics and guests and clients that will come along with us to talk about various aspects of business and in the business world today. If you missed some of the previous shows, our first show was on corporate culture, where I had two guests on that were existing clients over the last 10 years. And then the last two shows, if you had a chance to listen to those, were one of our clients that we work with quite heavily in the world of selection and individual development. And you can catch those shows at voiceamerica.com, and we're on the Business Channel. So, again, we're pleased to have you here today. And we're going to talk about teams today and team dynamics. And with me is my colleague, Gordon Medlock. Gordon, if you'll take a moment and introduce yourself and give us a little bit about your background. But Gordon is a member of the firm, and we've worked together in a number of ways. But I'll let Gordon introduce himself real quick.
Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's great to support you in the work you're doing with your consulting firm and also with the book you've got, What Leadership's Got to Do with It, and particularly this focus on group dynamics. My background is in psychology. I've worked as a consultant and a psychologist with organizations and individuals for over 20 years, and do executive coaching, leadership development work, and career management work, helping people really assess their careers and where they need to be able to best leverage their talent to find their most fulfilling work and the right work. And, of course, in the context of this show, one of the things we want to look at is how well people fit together as part of a team, from the point of view of as a member of the team, how their skill set and their capabilities best enable them to work with others to effectively implement team agendas and goals. And also, probably most importantly, from your perspective, Rick, the role of the leader and how that is critical to the success of the team functioning.
Well, you know, in terms of the role of the leader, one of the things we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show is truly is the leadership aspect of the whole dynamics. And leaders, and we're going to talk about great coaches and get into vision. But from a leadership perspective, you know, the shape of the team, so goes the leader, then the leadership of the team. So even though we're going to talk about group dynamics today, we're going to spend some time talking about the essence of leadership as it relates to that, but also about team dynamics and synergy as it comes into play there. So where Gordon and I are going to head today is we're going to talk about, you know, the team dynamics, leadership, the essence of a team, great coaches, vision, how critical is vision to the success of a team. We'll talk about the individual contributors of the team and how they can perhaps even enhance or perhaps even sabotage. We'll get into some case studies and some examples later on, but the impact of leadership of the team is huge, but we're also going to talk today about the team dynamics and the functionality of the team as it relates to the task side of what they have to accomplish, and we're also going to talk about the relationship side of the business and the continuity of the teams from the relationship side. So, and we'll speak more to that in the last segment, but Gordon, just touch real quickly on some of your and my discussions around team dynamics as they relate to those two aspects or elements.
Well, you know, Rick, I think one of the things that interests me quite a bit about this chapter of the book is your reference to sports teams and the importance of the right kind of chemistry to what it is that makes a team effective. And being from Chicago, I think of the Chicago Bulls in their heyday and their coach, Phil Jackson at the time. And, of course, Phil had a great sense of how to work together as a team. He was able to bring together individuals who may have had very conflicting agendas, as you point out in your book, somebody like a Dennis Rodman and a Michael Jordan and a Scottie Pippen. That was not an easy group to pull together, but he somehow was able to provide a vision for this team and to work with those personalities to get them to synchronize in a way that was absolutely brilliant. And I really like the way you've used and developed some of those perspectives on some of those sports teams to really look at what it is that really makes for an effective team.
Well, you know, it's always fascinating to me why you hear more about leadership in sports than you do leadership in business. And I've always wondered about how that comes to play. But, you know, years ago, back in the 80s, there was a whole big kick on self-directed work teams. And I was never a proponent of that. But, Gordon, what's your take on self-directed work teams?
Well, I tend to agree with you on that one. I think it would be sort of ridiculous to send out a football team without a coach and say, okay, see if you can win the Super Bowl. By the same token, you can't really expect a business to work effectively if you don't have some sort of leadership to really guide and focus the agenda of the group and make sure you've got the right team in place and do all the selection pieces and the focusing of the talent. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think that, again, we keep coming back to leadership being the key component here. In having a team be effective. Now, I know one of the things that our practice that we really focus on is the ability to assess leaders and assess teams in terms of their effectiveness, and we use a battery of assessment tests, which I think is what differentiates us as a group from a lot of the other consulting firms that some of our listeners may have worked with at some point. So, Rick, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how it is that you use some of these tools to really get an assessment of the capabilities of a team and of their leaders and being able to make sure you got the right fit for the right job.
You know, there's the old adage, or the old cliche, I should say, you know, one bad apple or one rotten apple can destroy the whole bushel. So you have one bad team member who just doesn't seem to get it or doesn't seem to want to play nicely in the sandbox, so to speak. But our use of assessments goes beyond what I think I've come encompassed in terms of other consulting firms. But the depth of the assessments I use, I think, are critical in that if we really need to understand how we're going to move this team forward and how this team works together functionally and how well the members of the team interface, it's critical about identifying the strengths and weaknesses of that individual. And I know that there was one of our clients had a distribution center in Aurora, and there was an individual who ran the distribution center and always hit his numbers and always did a great job and always had accolades and recognition of accomplishment. But when they moved him to a much larger distribution center in Indianapolis, where he was now a member of a three-man team that had to collaborate and work together versus a guy who operated as an individual contributor, he worked horribly within the context of the team, and his dominance and his arrogance and his aggressiveness was what's got in the way. But the ability to assess people in terms of their ability to work in the team, or even recognize if we want them on the team, you know, goes part and part or hand in hand to identifying behavior and continuity of individuals. And of course, those people who are listening and who are avid sports fans can certainly resonate with the Dennis Robbins of the world, or especially the Terrell Owens of the world and Randy Mosses of the world, who are great athletes but just absolutely destroy team continuity. And so our approach to team continuity and team success certainly is predicated on getting the right people on the bus and in the right seats, so to speak. So does that kind of answer where you're headed?
Absolutely, and I'd really be interested in hearing from our listeners in terms of if any of you out there have had issues where you've got a team member that's just not working and not pulling with the rest of the group and not sure what to do with that person, whether it's something that can they be coached and trained into kind of getting the right skill set and the right mindset to work with that team, or are they someone that's just really not the right fit for this particular organization and this team, and how do you make that assessment? I know that's a critical one. Sometimes people spend a lot of time trying to develop people in a direction that they're not really inclined to want to go, and end up feeling that they've invested a lot of energy that didn't go anywhere. So I think if any of our listeners are faced with that kind of question, we'd be happy to handle and be interested in responding to those questions and helping you understand how an accurate assessment can help you really save a lot of time and money in terms of making those kind of decisions.
Yeah, so if there is anybody who's got those kinds of questions, you can call in at 866-472-5790 or email us at rick@theeg, that's theeg.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions. If not during the show, we can respond back to you at a later time. But, you know, when you look at the assessment world, there are many organizations that will try to use the Myers-Briggs. And I know, Gordon, you've used the Myers-Briggs a lot in your background and past. And, of course, you know you've also used the 16PF, and that's the foundation of our practice here is the 16PF. But why do you think the 16PF is a better tool to use in team building than the Myers-Briggs?
Well, it just gets at variables that the Myers-Briggs doesn't get at. Myers-Briggs is good at looking at issues like the extent to which you're introverted versus extroverted, how well you're going to play with others, if you will, and some of the ways that you process information and approach deadlines. So those are important pieces of information, but it doesn't get at the range of variables that the 16PF does. It doesn't look at, for example, issues around aggression. To what degree is a person's aggressiveness level going to affect the way they operate as a team? It doesn't look at their attitude toward risk-taking and their willingness to be part of the group as opposed to wanting to kind of go off on their own. To what degree do they want to work as part of a team versus wanting to be on their own kind of path? And there are just a number of variables that I think the 16PF, as its name implies, there's 16 personality variables that you're looking at, whereas the Myers-Briggs is really looking at four, or at best eight, if you look at the two polarities of those four main scales. So it really doesn't have nearly the same power that the 16PF does in terms of helping you really target what might be the issue for this particular individual.
Well, I'm Rick Thiem, and I'm your host. You're joined with me as Gordon Medlock, an associate of the firm here at the Executive Group. And you can find us on www.theeg.com. We're just about ready to go to break here shortly. We're talking about group dynamics today and how that impacts an organization's ability to be productive and perform effectively. And what we found is that the poorer performing teams that just can't seem to get out of their own way wind up causing more damage than more good in today's organizational structure. We're going to spend, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about leadership and vision and how that plays an impact in the world of group dynamics. So we look forward to having you back at the break. I'll be back with you in a few.
Comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with my friend and colleague, business associate Gordon Medlock. We came together, for those of you who we didn't really go into it, but Gordon and I have, I would say, a relatively rich background. Maybe mine's a little bit richer, but Gordon's background in psychology and having worked with the Myers-Briggs and other instruments as well as the 16PF was what linked Gordon and myself together. And my use in the 16PF is a huge piece of what we do in our practice in the consulting world, from selection to development, even into coaching and the team dynamics. So Gordon, just touch real quick on your exposure to the 16PF and your interest in terms of how we actually came together.
Well, I've always found the 16PF, I was first introduced to it in the late 1980s, and found it as an extremely important adjunct to the coaching work that I was doing at the time. And it's what it did is it provided a framework that enabled my clients to be able to understand. It helps to translate their psychological issues into the kind of business concerns that are easily understood by the executives I worked with and their managers. So it was really powerful in taking and looking at psychological factors and how they're going to influence the capabilities and talents and productivity of the individuals involved. And we used it also a lot in selection and hiring when we're looking at, is this the right person for this particular position? What are the strengths they bring? What are the weaknesses? And how does that person fit with the culture of the organization as we understand it? So it was and has always been, I think, an extremely useful tool for making those kind of decisions and helping management make those kind of decisions so that they get the right team and then they're focusing the right people in the right directions and developing toward the right skill sets, because they're basically working on leveraging the strengths of people rather than trying to compensate for something that really isn't there. So, again, I just think it's a great tool for helping ground this work and connecting it to business results.
Well, we're going to connect the dots with that more as we go. But, you know, right now as we move into group dynamics and kind of what makes for a great team is really leads into the whole concept of what's a great coach. And, again, back to a sports analogy, you know, the Vince Lombardis of the world, the Don Shula's, Red Auerbach's, Phil Jackson. Jackson, Pat Riley's, the John Woodens of the world, the Bill Belichick's of the world, for those people who really are into sports. I wish there were more examples other than Jack Welch to give us from a business perspective, but there doesn't seem to be. But Warren Buffett, obviously, could be considered in that class. But, you know, what makes a great coach, and why did John Wooden win 10 national championships, and why was Red Auerbach such a phenomenal success with the Celtics, and you know Phil Jackson with the Bulls, and you know great coaches have great people skills, and they know how to bring people together, and that's the essence of a team is bringing them together. But beyond being a great coach, you also have to have great team members. And the ability to use assessments as a way to identify whether or not you really want someone on the team or not on the team is also critical. So, Gordon, just speak to the fact of as you look at assembling a team and putting a team together, the utilization of assessments to then validate the members of the team or the criteria used for bringing people on the team.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'd like to just take a step back from that just a bit to say something about the context of leadership in which we make that assessment, because I think it really starts with the leader's vision for what it is they want to have the team accomplish. And I think of examples, when you mentioned some of those sports team examples, of what I consider to be really great leaders and average leaders. And I know Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great, I think has described the qualities of what it is that makes a great leader that I think is extremely helpful in looking at how you assess from the leadership on down to the team members. Because frankly, it all starts with understanding the dynamics of that leader and their capacity for not only leading others, but having a clear vision of where they're taking them. It reminds me in some of my work, I've worked with a number of IT firms that provide talent management software for different organizations. And I'm thinking of a couple of organizations I've worked with where, in one case, the CEO had a very clear vision of how the product that they were selling was part of a whole solution that was going to empower and enable organizations to transform. And it was very exciting to be a part of that organization and to see how that leader created a vision for the entire organization that people could align behind and focus behind. And Collins really talks about that being the important skill of a leader, is to create a simple enough, clear enough vision of what it is that people are trying to accomplish. He talks about the difference between the hedgehog and the fox. And the hedgehog is the one who has a single good idea and really can deliver it and express it clearly, whereas the fox is kind of all over the place, very clever and able to move around a lot. But when it comes right down to it, when the fox comes to try to attack the hedgehog, all the hedgehog does is roll up into a little ball with all those spiny quills, and the fox is out of out of solutions and has to try something else because the hedgehog has outfoxed him again. So it's that idea of a leader to have a simple, clear idea that they can really guide the organization toward. And to reflect back on the leaders that didn't have that quality, another organization that comes to mind was one where the leader was just simply involved in wanting to buy this organization so he could turn it around for a profit, and didn't really have an investment on what this product and this company could do to actually help their clients transform their organizations. And as a result, the whole morale of the organization was much less than it might have been. The teams were not as empowered. People did not feel as inspired or motivated. There was lower levels of engagement because people couldn't get behind the leader in that vision, because the only vision that the leader had was how to turn this organization over for a personal profit. So it was not something that really people could align behind. So I guess I'm coming back, Rick, to the point, and I know you make this in your book quite a bit, that the assessment of the leadership qualities and that capability to really have a clear vision for people to align behind is probably the number one thing. So let me kind of throw that back to you for a moment, and then we can come back to look at how we fix the team behind that vision and know how to assess what people go best into that context. But I'd like to hear your comments on leadership first before we jump into that in more detail.
Well, one of the statements in the book I make is a quote I came up with or cornered, you know, is unless there's a common cause for people to rally around, most people will just wander around. And that is so true in the 20 years of consulting, and even in the 20 years prior to that in the business world, that is so true. But when you talk about vision, one of the greatest examples of vision was when the Soviets beat us to the space program back in the early 60s. In 1961, some people may remember this, some people may be too young to know this, but in 1961, on May 25th, John F. Kennedy, in a special message to Congress on urgent national needs, said, "The United States should get a goal of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely by the end of the returning him safely to Earth by the end of the decade." And that vision, that was a vision that he had. And on July 21st, 1969, guess what? The American public, the American will rallied around that, and that vision came true on July 21st, 1969, when Neil Armstrong stepped foot on the moon. And that, to me, that's one of the greatest examples of what vision really means. He didn't say, "Well, you know what, let's see if we can't put a man on the moon." He made a bold statement that said, "This is what we need to do," and people rallied behind that. And great leaders have that vision for people to rally around. And when you look at the essence of a team, the essence of a team is founded based on the principles of a great leader, the principles of having a great vision, and then having great people on the team that can execute. And so another statement in my book says, you'll never fulfill the potential of your business until you get the people process right. Or to Jim Collins' point, get the right people on the bus and in the right seats. And then guess what happens to your team? So is it any wonder then the Yankees have won more in the last century? I think like 26 World Series championships have the Yankees won. But look what they do. They pay for talent. They demand talent, and they pull that talent together, you know, to develop a strong team. So Gordon, based on leadership and those dynamics, where do you bring that into play?
Well, I would say to go back to your example of the man on getting a man on the moon and back safely in the decade, I think when Kennedy made that statement, he certainly had the vision, but he also had, I suspect, the understanding of what it took to do that in terms of knowing what infrastructure needed to be in place in terms of our engineering capability, the level of our knowledge of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, its capabilities to deliver that result, that we had the technology in place, that we had the talent in place, the personnel. A lot of moving parts needed to be behind that statement for that to be meaningful and for it to actually happen, because one of the things that can be most discouraging is if a leader has a vision and can't execute because of the gap between what that vision is and what the capabilities are of the organization. So behind the scenes, I suspect there were volumes and volumes of work and many, many people communicating to the president about exactly what the capabilities were and that this was, in fact, a realizable vision. It's important, I think, for a good leader to have what they call a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal, something that is beyond what you normally think you would accomplish, but is still reachable with exceptional effort and performance. And I think that's the sort of thing that gets people going. That's what motivates a group. So I think you do need that piece. But to the second point here, I think you also need a very good assessment of the infrastructure. What's the work that needs to be done? What are the capabilities that need to be in place? Well-defined job descriptions, work processes, descriptions of what talent is necessary, and then being able to hire and fill and staff those positions with the right people. So that's where the assessment piece comes in terms of making that vision a reality.
Well, it also comes into the thing of auditing the business and making sure that your business process and design and your business plan and your structure, which are all concepts of the fundamental five aspects of the book, you know, are part and parcel to what we do from a consulting practice here. But it's beyond just assembling the right people on the team. It's can you then create an outcome from that team? So you assemble the team, but then do you have the ability to really create a team that gets the job done and then can execute what you want them to execute? So as you look at then, you know, kind of as Gordon and I move into this next half of the segment, we're going to be looking at things that encompass, you know, beyond just leadership and vision. So what happens when we look at individual contributors and how do those come into play? What happens when you start to identify true objectives that the team needs to accomplish and can they get done or why aren't they getting done? You think you've assembled a great team, but your results still aren't there. Well, why is that? And we're going to explore that in the latter part of the show. But you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. I'm the president of the Executive Group, located in Chesterton, Indiana. You can check us on the website at www.theeg.com. If you've got questions, call in at 866-472-5790 or email us at rick@theeg.com. For more information on the book, check out whatleadershipsgottodowithit.com to get more insight on the book and its concepts. We'll join you shortly.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theEG.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hello, welcome back. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with my friend and colleague and business associate, Gordon Medlock. And we're talking about group dynamics and how the interplay is within organizations and its success and failures as it relates to building teams and working in the framework of groups. And we talked in the first part of the show, we talked about leadership and setting a vision and used some analogies of some great coaches and how those work together. But, you know, great coaches are one thing, but you got to have great players. So we spoke a lot about the sports analogy and using those individuals, you know, such as Pat Riley and Phil Jackson. But, you know, Phil Jackson with the Bulls had Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and John Paxson and had a host of players that managed that. Pat Riley with the Lakers had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, John Wooden. Had a lot of no names. You know, not many people stand out when you think about Wooden's 10 national championships. And the only one that really comes out and stands out is Kareem, which really speaks to John Wooden's success as a leader and a coach. But when you look at Bill Belichick, it's you know, Brady. But, you know, one of the things that interested me about when the Patriots won their very first Super Bowl, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but when the Patriots won their very first Super Bowl, and as in tradition, most teams came out, or in traditionally speaking, all teams come out where each individual player is introduced. The Patriots came out that year and broke tradition and came out and was just introduced as a team because there weren't any big name players. No one really knew who Tom Brady really was at the time. And so when you look at those great coaches, the Don Shulas and the Bob Greases of the world, they all had great corresponding team players. And there's no truth better than the whole terminology that says there's no I in team. And the pool of shared meaning is the birthplace of synergy was written by Kerry Patterson, and that statement couldn't be truer than in the world of team dynamics. So if you look at Michael Jordan's era with Phil Jackson, and then you look when Phil Jackson came to the Lakers, and with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, to prima donnas in my mind. That was a disaster. I mean, that just didn't work, and somebody had to go, and it was Shaquille. They went on then to build a few more national championships, but the piece is you've got to have great people. And in our assessment work, I'll be at a client these next 2 days up in Northern Illinois tomorrow and Wednesday, and we're going to be doing some team dynamics that's going to lead into developing your strategic initiative. And we had to remove one member of the team going into this whole project because of the negativity this individual brought to the equation. Our assessments helped look at some of those dynamics, but it was truly his performance that got in the way. But so, Gordon, as we look at individual contributors and what goes into the individual aspect of what makes up a team, what's been your background in using not only the 16-PIP but even the Myers-Briggs in identifying that talent piece?
Well, the first thing I want to just say along those lines is I think one of the skills of a good manager and a good coach is the ability to recognize the strengths of their people. So one of the first pieces of the assessment piece is to know what your talent is and what people are really good at, and then leveraging the strengths rather than trying to get everybody to sort of deal with those aspects of their performance that are both subpar or not their strengths. So I think we all have the experience. If you try to work on something you're not particularly good at, your motivation isn't very strong to do it, and you're not going to get a whole lot better. But if somebody asks you to get better at something you really love doing and are really excellent at, you're going to get even better at that, and you're really going to be excellent and be a superior performer. So when you're looking at assessing a team, first of all, the first thing I look at is the manager's ability to identify the specific talent of each member. One of the things that there's a lot of research that indicates that engagement and commitment to the organization is based on the fact of people being able to do what it is they do best every day on the job. If you're not maximizing and getting your people to express and work with the talents that they have and the things they love doing most, you're going to have less engagement, less productivity, and you're not going to get the results that you want. So first thing for the manager and the coach is to be able to understand what the talent is, what people really love doing and doing it well, and then making sure that their jobs are designed in such a way and their membership in the team is designed in such a way that they can make that contribution with that piece of their talent. That said, the next assessment piece you need to look at is make sure you've got the right people on the team that are going to blend their skill set. So if you've got a person who's really strong on the technical side, really good, strong engineer, but not particularly good on the relationship management side, you don't put him in charge of the project, but you make him a technical expert, and you get the person who's better at managing relationships to handle that part of it, rather than try to get your technical guy to be a better people person. So it's, again, knowing how to put the blend of talent together to make sure you've got the strongest possible team. So on that level, the assessment part has to do with understanding talent and how to develop it and how to recognize it. Then, of course, there's also that unpredictable factor, the psychology of the individual, and that's where the 16-PF comes in our more in-depth assessment piece comes in, because a lot of times, even with the right talent, there may be personal barriers or issues that can cause an individual not to function as effectively or can create dysfunction within the team. So I think we need to look at both where those psychological factors may come into play, and I think it's also important to look at the dysfunctions that can affect a whole team culture and the dynamics of a team. And I know you've spent a good bit of time, Rick, looking at that team dynamics piece in your work. I wonder if you might be able to say something about some of the phases or stages of dysfunction that you've seen in the teams that we've worked with and how you've worked in terms of addressing those kinds of issues.
Well, it's... For those of you who have never read the book, I recommend this book highly in the work that we do because we just feed off of it. But probably one of the most prolific writers that I've come across in terms of team dynamics is Patrick Lencioni's book on the 5 dysfunctions of a team. While I think it's a great book, I do think it falls short, not to give credit where credit's due, but in there he talks about the 5 dysfunctions of a team, and I think what he misses is the lack that what we spoke to in the beginning, and that is where he falls short in the book is he doesn't spend enough time, in my opinion, talking about leadership and its leadership's role and vision, nor did I think he spent enough time on what I coined alignment and inclusion, which I think are crucial. And I'm going to give an example to that in the last segment of what I mean by alignment and inclusion. But I want to spend a little bit of time in terms of answering Gordon's question, because I think it's most appropriately answered in Lencioni's work. So you've got this great leader, you've got people assembled, and you've got this great vision, and now you've got a job to do, and that's to execute and get the mission. And in Lencioni's work, he talks about the five dysfunctions, and an area of dysfunction number one is lack of trust. And as we look at what that lack of trust means, it means many, many things, but it really, really portrays in his book the lack of trust in my ability to say what I need to say or what needs to be said without fear of retribution, so that I can speak my piece and not have to have what we call the meeting after the meeting. So the absence of trust can be diminished by the culture, by the team members, by the leader, by having one or two bad individuals who tend to sabotage things. I'm sure we've all seen that. But an absence of trust, I think, is critical. So in the piece of how do we get that component piece, Gordon, in terms of the trust issue?
Well, I think you hit on it. I think this is probably the most important issue of leadership, is the capacity to instill trust in the people that are following, and to create a culture where people can be honest and can be themselves and can honestly express what it is that they have to say and can disagree with the leadership and come up with the best possible idea, as opposed to everybody playing a compliance game. I know the next level that Lencioni talks about in that model that we, as Rick said, we do use quite a bit in our consulting work, is the absence of trust leads to the fear of conflict and the inability to really say what you mean for fear that you can't really trust where the leadership is, how they're going to respond to that, or to what degree they might be punitive in their responses. So to the degree that you're operating with fear of conflict in your culture, you're going to have this sort of pseudo-compliance where everybody kind of might be sort of nice to each other face-to-face, but behind the back you may have gossip. You may have people who are really not bought into the organization fully because they don't really agree with what's going on, but they haven't really had a chance to fully express their own opinions and to honestly disagree and work through that disagreement to a point where they can work together. So, I think that the trust is the foundation from which everything else flows. And if your leadership can't demonstrate trust and the colleagues that you work with don't have trust and that sense of safety to be, express what they really think, it's going to affect the entire openness and effectiveness of the organization. I think once you get past the issues around conflict, if you don't have an open culture where you can honestly disagree, you end up with a lack of commitment. And this is one of Lencioni's third point, is that it really leads to a highly compliant culture where people are going through the motions but not fully committed. And as a result, you're not getting the results and you're not getting the engagement that we all know is critical to productivity in the organization. So if you haven't laid this foundation, you're going to have an organization that's really not fully engaged and not fully productive. So,
one of the things, Gordon, we talked about in our very first show was about corporate culture.
Right.
And a team has a hard time functioning effectively in an ineffective culture.
Exactly.
So as you build your culture, you can't – this is why the fundamental five are so critical. Great teams without a great culture are not going to exist. Great teams without strong individual performers are not going to exist. Great teams without great leaders or great vision are not going to exist. So – back to the book, the what's leadership got to do with it is, and why I talk about the fundamental five and why I think it's so critical is that all the things that I speak to in the book, based on 20 years of consulting and hundreds of clients and God knows hundreds of case studies that I've seen, and I don't know how many executives that I've assessed. I know that I've probably looked at well over 8,000 assessments, but we're going to talk more as we wrap things up about some of Lencioni's work. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. You can check us out on the web at www.theeg.com. You can also check out the components of the book on What's Leadership Got to Do with It.com. We look forward to your comments. We look forward to your questions. Listeners, call in at 866-472-5790. Or email us at rick@theeg.com. You're listening to Rick Thiemann and Gordon Medlock. We'll be back to you after the break.
business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theEG.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, president of the Executive Group, if you've just joined us. The Executive Group has been in business for about 20 years, actually 20 years, and you can find us at www.theeg.com. My associate today is a colleague, a friend of mine, Gordon Medlock, and we're talking about the five dysfunctions of a team, kind of moving along with Lynn Cioni's work. And we talked about lack of commitment as the third element of fear of conflict. So, Gordon, why don't you pick up the pace on that one?
Sure. I think the next phase that Lynn Cioni focuses on, and we certainly look at a lot of this in our consulting work as well, in our coaching work, is the avoidance of accountability, is that what happens if your culture isn't really fully engaged and committed, then people are not as willing to have those tough conversations when one of their colleagues maybe isn't carrying their weight fully or has dropped the ball on an important point they're not really addressing those kind of performance issues. And this is a tough part in any culture, is it kind of goes back to that trust issue again. Can you be open and honest with one another around where you're not performing so that you can address those issues and get the level of the performance where it needs to be? And what happens when that isn't going on, when there isn't that kind of honest feedback, the people are allowed to continue to underperform. The organization lowers the bar in terms of its performance standard, and people are simply not achieving at the level that that the organization would want, and certainly that the leadership would want. I'm sure some of our leaders or listeners have had experiences like that, or have dealt with culture similar to that, where that is an important issue. And we know how tough those conversations are, and I think that's one of the things that we can be of help in terms of helping managers and colleagues to be able to be honest with each other and create a culture where they can give each other honest feedback about what's working and what's not. Then finally, I think the last point in Lencioni's model is that if that accountability isn't there, the final bottom line is there's an inattention to results. That, in fact, what suffers at the end is the organization is not achieving the results because the entire organization is not focused on that issue. If they're not really holding each other to high standards, ultimately they're not really looking at what's in the best interest of the organization and what's going to lead to that ability to achieve those stretch goals that we talked about earlier, to realize that vision that was aggressive but enough of a stretch that people could achieve it with the right kind of commitment. And what happens when that inattention to results is there, people start focusing on other things like their own individual career development, their own egos, their own departmental territory and protecting it, instead of really looking at what's going to be good for the organization. So believe me, I think in all these areas, you can have all, as you said earlier, Rick, you can have everything you need in terms of leadership, but if you don't have these dysfunctions handled so that your team is operating and the dynamics are clean, you know, you're not going to be able to achieve what you want.
Well, and then you get people operating with hidden agendas, you know, kind of what's in it for me kind of thing. The lack of support and continuity breaks down. When you really look at teams, I mean, think of a pit crew at an Indy 500 and how well and how quickly they have to work together and perform to perfection. Or you think of a dance team or, you know, any place where teams have to really work together. When there's a lack of trust, a lack of continuity, lack of commitment, lack of holding others accountable for those aspects, it really makes it tough to bring any continuity to the team. But, you know, but once you assemble a great team, just that doesn't mean that you always wind up getting the job done. Or you fall short. I mean, look what the Miami Heat did in terms of assembling the talent and the team they did, and then they fell short because they didn't have some of the fundamental things necessary that the Mavericks played together as a team did. So if you're a sports fan, if you're not a sports fan, and we've used a lot of sports analogies, I apologize tremendously for that. But, you know, as Gordon and I continue to talk about those elements of what makes great teams and outcomes of those teams, you know, I've had the privilege of working and developing teams and even looking at developing cross-functional teams. And I remember there was one team, a group of 15 members of the finance group of a $600 million organization. And in that, that organization had to reduce their billing time or date of close end of month from 15 days to 4 days. And they couldn't hire anybody. But yet that was a corporate mandate to get that job done. And that team didn't know how to get it done and was unsure if it could even be done. And we put them through our model of developing an analysis and a process that creates the outcome of improved productivity. And we literally reduced that from 15 days to 4 days in 6 months. And we did that through a series of activities, a series of exercises and things that we ran that team through to help them accomplish that. But we also took that team and throughout the course of that 6 months made three internal cross-functional teams. In other words, we had three teams of five with cross-functional roles that helped us get at the heart of analyzing and tearing down and breaking down what was going wrong to be able to achieve an outcome. In that same organization, in a little bit different fashion, the aftermarket team, challenged with growing aftermarket, was had challenges, but the challenges came internally, not externally. And one of the things that wound up happening was is that I actually had that team meet and develop a cross-functional team that then went down and studied with the plant why things weren't going well. And lo and behold, we found out that the thing behind that was no one had gone through and updated the bill of materials in over 4 years, which was creating some of the problems. So sometimes you can assemble great teams. They still don't know exactly how to get the job done. And learning how to do that is as critical as having the right members, but learning a process and methodology that creates outcomes and results is also critical.
Rick, so Gordon, I'm glad you said that. I think that's a critical component here. And I think an important part of our assessment process is to look at the business process that's related to what it is you're trying to achieve and what it is that needs to be improved. What are the blocks or the barriers? Understanding what the workflow is and what needs to be fixed or what can be streamlined to make things more effective. I think the example you gave is a good example where you're looking at the fit of the team and the skill set, but you're also digging down into that analysis of the process to see how we can improve it to accomplish the results we want. So I think it takes us to the question of looking at the infrastructure, the workflow process, the job design as an important part of the total assessment picture. And so if you really want to understand how a team functions well in a business environment, you need to look at that as well. I think one other point I just want to make, I know we're getting close to time here on this, but one of the pieces I want to say is I know our listeners are probably wanting some specific tools of what they can take away in terms of how to help build more effective teams. And one of the things I just want to recommend for people out there is that the ability to give honest feedback to each other about what's working and what's not is critical to the success of any team. And it's one of the most difficult things to create in a culture. We talked a little bit about it with the dysfunction discussion, but I'm remembering one organization that I worked with where the CEO had a principle where each of the members of the team would sit down and do a 360 with their team members around positive feedback, things they saw them doing well, positive, critical, constructive feedback in terms of what things they thought they could improve, and then getting the person's own self-evaluation of their work on the team, and then what would be sort of a development agenda or something that person could work on to be more effective in that kind of environment, in that kind of team situation. And that was initially an exercise that everyone found very threatening, to be able to sit in the same room with one another and have that kind of honest conversation. But believe me, it helped to really clear the air. If there were issues, they got identified, and it gave people a chance to work positively toward the goals that they wanted to accomplish. There was much less gossip or behind-the-scenes discussion and much less resentment if somebody had a performance issue. But it took a leader that was willing to create a culture where it was safe enough to have those kind of conversations. So just like in any sports activity, you've got instant feedback of how you're doing. You know right away if you've won the game or not. Business is often less clear, and our jobs are often more complex in many ways. But we need the feedback to be able to learn and to grow and develop effectively and to be more productive. So you need to create a culture where that feedback's possible. Yeah, Rick, sure.
We need to wrap up.
Okay.
You've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. Gordon's got some great points. Gordon and I would be glad to help any listeners that have any questions or thoughts or ideas. You can call us at 866-472-5790. Email Gordon or myself at rick@theeg.com, theeg.com. We'll be glad to help you solve some of your business issues and outcomes. In shows to come, we'll be talking about furthering expansion of what we discuss in the book. We'll be talking about business dynamics and structural dynamics. Then we're going to break out in individual topics throughout the rest of that as we move forward in the rest of the shows to come. We thank you for listening and hope to have you back next week at 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Pacific at voiceamerica.com. Visit us on the Business Channel. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. Thanks for listening.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.